Last night, right before I thought I was going to bed, I had an inspiration to read the end of Autobiography of a Yogi. I have no idea where that came from, actually. It just popped into my mind to do it, so I listened. And I had two experiences after I read it. The last chapter of Autobiography of a Yogi is called The Final Years, which I forget the first words, but 1940 to 1951. And I had the experience, we were just listening last week to Nayaswami Devi teach a class in this leadership course that Ananda's offering worldwide. Many of us are coming together every Monday night to sit here and watch those streaming live videos and then have a discussion about them. And she opened her talk by sharing an experience that I know many of us have had. I've expressed it verbally myself before, and I'm about to now again, that she said she too had been reading a chapter the night before her talk called The Law of Miracles. And she said she was asking herself, was this chapter always here? You know, or did the book get edited? I mean, you just have that feeling that she's probably read Autobiography of a Yogi more times than we can imagine. I myself have read it many times, and I've read parts of it countless times. But I would have sworn last night that I had never read this chapter. I want to say right at the beginning of this talk that if anybody has not read Autobiography of a Yogi, please, after church today, go to the boutique, pick up a copy, and start reading it. Whatever the reason is that you are here today, whether you're looking to know more love in your life, know less fear in your life, figure out how to make things work better, it doesn't matter what you're looking for, it's in that book. That book is priceless. It is one of the spiritual classics. It's known to be one of the spiritual classics. And, well, the teachings are really, they're beyond words. Many times that's simply the truth. Please read the words of this great master, Paramahansa Yogananda. When I was done reading the chapter, which, of course, was exactly about our talk today, our reading, I felt a little bit like Maria Warner, who was one of the Nayaswamis at Ananda. She died a couple of years ago. But in her last talk that she gave here in Palo Alto, the reading was, I don't know which one, but about samadhi. And she stood up and she said just a few words. And then with amazing courage, she had whoever was doing sound that day play Swami Kriyananda reading Yogananda's poem, Samadhi, and said very few words after it and sat down, really with such humility, like what would she add about this experience of cosmic consciousness beyond that poem that Yogananda wrote. I had that experience last night after reading the chapter in the book. This is not a way out for me because I am going to go about and give a sermon here, but I felt woefully inadequate. What are the words that one would use to begin to explain who are these avatars? Why do they come? How do they come? How can we talk about and appeal to the mind or explain logically that which is literally inexplicable? As it says in the Bhagavad Gita reading, and interestingly, this is the second week now that Swamiji included this reading that says, whenever virtue declines and vice predominates, I take form and incarnate. And we hear those words, and one has to think, who is the I, and what does it mean, take form? In and of itself, it's incomprehensible. Here we are trying to talk about cosmic consciousness, the infinite Christ consciousness, not Jesus Christ the man, but Jesus the Christ. It's a title. It means teacher. It means prophet. It means savior. It has nothing to do with the man in physical form, except that that Christ consciousness took form and presented itself to us, really, literally, to appear to us, to show us how God would behave, to show us how God would take care of things in those times. And again, as I said last week, and I won't go back there now, but he was coming because the Jewish people were in trouble. So he's appearing in a physical form as a teacher. And after that, it's very difficult to follow this fine thread. So we're talking about qualities of something, that which takes form but is formless. And one has to be reminded of Jesus Christ himself, the man who was crucified on a cross. The body died. But several days later, that body reappears, flesh and bones, exactly as it was. And in fact, when it disappears the next time, it's not crucified, it doesn't die, it merely disappears into spirit. It's form and it's formless. It's here and now, and yet it's part of eternity. These are things that are very hard for the human mind, the ego, the human mind, to grasp. In fact, as I hope I'll move on to show you, it's impossible for the human mind to grasp. So it's here, it's now, it's present, it exists in eternity, all at the same time. Yogananda tells a wonderful story, I don't remember where it's written, but I remembered it, of Dr. Lewis, who was one of his foremost disciples in this life. And apparently when Dr. Lewis was young, he was a little bit of a challenging child, probably just because he was young and a child. But Master tells a story of one day, Dr. Lewis's mother was calling him to come downstairs. And he was upstairs, and he started down the stairs, and then he decided he didn't want to go downstairs. So he said, no. And she said to him, as any mother would, you get down here. And he said, no. And in fact, he didn't go. But as he was standing there, he suddenly heard a voice, which later he said was a lovely voice, that said to him, you listen to your mother, you do not misbehave in this way, and get down those stairs immediately. And as he heard that voice, he listened, and he went down the stairs. Years later, Master was visiting him in his home. And as he was walking up the stairs, he got right to that place on the stairs. And he said he saw a light. And he very quietly looked down and he said to Dr. Lewis, oh, you had an experience of God here. Years later, it happened in the moment. It happens in eternity. This is what we're talking about when we're talking about the infinite Christ, when we're talking about super consciousness. There is no super conscious experience that ever happens that doesn't continue to be in the ether and happening. It's timeless. Master asked the question, is God personal or impersonal? How do we think about that? You see all of these opposing thoughts and ideas. And then we keep coming back to the understanding that God is all of it. He is both personal and impersonal. And even while he's being personal, there's an impersonality to it. Both Master and Swamiji say over and over in their teachings, we need God to be personal. There is no way that we could relate to God if we didn't imagine God in a personal form. Why do we talk about Divine Mother? Why do we feel such love when that happens? Because when we think of mothers, we think of love. Most of us tend to think of God as the most wonderful people we know, only better. That's how we think of it, because we're thinking of it from our human consciousness. And as long as we're thinking, which happens from our human consciousness, as long as we're seeing with human eyes, there's an inherent limitation. And Master says, fine, of course, turn it into a form. He says in one of his talks, were I to ask anybody in this room to try and describe God without referring to a form and something that related to the human form, nobody could do it, that it's virtually impossible. And yet, we know that God is ultimately impersonal. There's another story that Devi just told, and this was now a couple of weeks ago in her leadership class. She said she went through a period where she was feeling that she needed some special attention from Swami Kriyananda. This was many years ago. She just wanted to be special, to get some special feedback from him. And she was trying, and a lot of time went by, but he wasn't paying any attention. She never asked for anything. And then one day, he just looked at her, and he said to her, Devi, I don't hold anybody as special. I don't even hold myself as special. Without her ever asking, he said, this divine love is impersonal. Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, in whatever form anyone worships me, I will appear to them. He doesn't say in whatever form people worship. He's not saying worship the form. He's saying if you are using a form as a reminder of God, if you're using any form as something that would stimulate devotion, which is such a meaningful human quality. Devotion is one of those qualities, whatever way we can bring it up in ourselves, that it can be that which raises us up to begin to know the divine. So Krishna says, in whatever form you worship me, I myself will appear to you. Of course we need form, and we need it to be personal, and then it's formless. In the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, who is driving a chariot in human form for Arjuna, and I'm sure most of you know the Bhagavad Gita is a story that takes place on a battlefield. The whole story takes place with Arjuna sitting in a chariot, being driven by Krishna, who's answering questions, all of which answer, the questions are asked so that the answers can be given about how we find God. And in the 11th chapter, Krishna appears to Arjuna for the first time, not in human form, but in the form of the infinite Christ, in the form of cosmic consciousness. And Arjuna, for the first time, sees Krishna in every atom of creation, in every being, in everything that exists. He sees millions of pairs of eyes. He calls it thousands of arms. He sees him everywhere. He sees the enormity and the unimaginable state of God being in everything, of that consciousness not only informing everything, but taking form in everything. And he's frightened. The degree to which he felt awe frightened him. And he says to Krishna in chapter 11, these are not the exact words, but he says, basically, I can't do this, Krishna. He begs Krishna to come back to him in a form as he had been seeing him, as friend, as teacher, as beloved. He said, please come back into the form of Krishna. He said, the Krishna guise that I'm used to, take that form again. He simply could not stand that experience. And it so speaks to us of what happens to us, our own experience of having an ego, and this ego that can't tolerate, just simply can't tolerate it because it's terrifying, that which is beyond it. So we try desperately to make everything logical and rational and sane. We like things to be in human form in a way that we can grapple with it. We want to ask questions and we want there to be answers. We want desperately for somebody to be able to say to us so that our ego can understand, here's what God is. Let me just tell you. I'll explain it to you now. As many times as people have asked the question, I'm going to explain it to you now. Swami says his example of this is very much like a bird that's been kept in a cage all of its life. While its very nature is to fly, if you take that bird and you open the cage door, very often it either doesn't leave or it leaves, but it very quickly comes back because it begins to feel safe in this experience of boundaries, of limit, of knowing in the cage, knowing right where the food is, knowing just how to put its beak outside, but not too far outside, but going out there and flying around, of reclaiming its nature, of being a completely free being, it doesn't want to do that. And it's exactly the experience that we cling to as human beings. We want to know, so badly, logically, that while we stay in that mind state, we limit to a huge degree our ability to have spiritual experiences. Swamiji has said over and over that if people in the West are so logical, so rational, that they limit their ability to grow spiritually by clinging to their minds. And yet, this infinite Christ consciousness, infinite, Master says, another phrase that we can't begin to understand, which is part of why he says so beautifully over and over, go ahead, give it a form, give it a shape, make it in a way that you can begin to relate to it. Let that be your next step, because the human mind cannot understand infinity. We look at the sky, we see stars, and particularly on a beautiful clear night, and we think, wow, look at all those stars. Then we get a telescope, and we realize how limited our vision was. Then we hear phrases like, maybe we're seeing millions of stars. But how can we begin to fathom that in this galaxy alone there are billions of stars, and then that there are billions of galaxies? No matter how we take it out, the human mind reaches a limit. He says very cutely that if you even start talking about your ancestors. You talk about your parents, then your parents' parents, then your parents' 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 parents. He said, eventually, everybody gets back to Adam and Eve. Well, how can we think about that? You see, we're so limited by this mind. So we have to find ways to have experiences that will take us beyond mind, because nobody can explain that which has to be realized by direct experience. There is no other way, which is exactly why Jesus said, "Be still and know that I am." Jesus said, "No man hath seen me." Buddha said, Buddha refused to engage in discussions about metaphysics. What did Buddha do? He suggested to all of his disciples that they consider things at a level more of their of a moral dilemma, that they look at their own morality. I just recently read, when I was looking for, not for this talk, but recently, the ways that the great teachers tried to talk about God. Lao Tzu said, "He who knows won't tell, and he who tells knows not. He who knows tells not, and he who tells knows not." None of these great teachers will begin to explain God to us, because ultimately, that great mystery is really simply not open for discussion. It's not the way it is. That discussion cannot happen from man to man. That great truth can only be shared by the divine as we begin to approach that consciousness. These avatars come, they take form, and they are an expression of the divine. But that's different than a realization of the divine. They come to show us the way. And the most beautiful thing about avatars, Master says, unlike many other great saints, and there are many great saints, and many of us have had the opportunity to meet him, because on our way to being blessed by being in the presence of a true avatar, there is apparently a little bit of a path that's followed. First, we get the inspiration to read some books, and something tugs on us. We feel the truth there. We hear music. We know something speaking to us. That sound, that om. Interestingly, for the second week, we hear this chant, "I am om, omnipresent, all-pervading." Of course, it comes up in these first few weeks where Swamiji's trying to lay a groundwork for us where we could even begin to imagine the teachings that we'll be hearing about all year as we read the Bible and the Gita. So we hear music, then we find a teacher, and we spend time near the teacher. And all of these are beautiful steps along the way of our spiritual path. But what he says, what Master says, is that when these great avatars come, they only have the ability to take as many souls who are willing back to God. Nobody before an avatar can take as many souls as are willing back. That's why Jesus says in so many different ways in the Bible, "For those who have ears to hear." This is our job, is to open up, to really find ways to connect with this extraordinary inspiration. We heard it in our affirmation today of sharing. "That which I give away, I give not away." Swamiji says, the only way to begin to approach knowing God is by, and he lists these ways, serving others, karma yoga, doing things without any regard for what we're going to get in return. Right action, right mindedness, just by giving, serving, everything we can do that helps us plug into that feeling of devotion. Because the truth can never be learned by the mind. It can only be realized through intuition. And everything we do that helps us increase our devotion brings us deeper and deeper into that intuitive place where we can then know God. Only God Himself has the ability, the right, the way to allow us to experience that infinite nature. And as many expressions as there are of it in the earth, it is dramatically different, albeit wonderful, to look at than having the experience itself. This is why the avatars come in his beautiful poem, God's Boatman. Master says, "Oh, I will come back again and again." In the final lines, he said, if I need to, a trillion times, if I feel even one brother is left behind. What a beautiful offering. God says, open to me and I will be there. I recently read a saying of Thomas Edison, who said, opportunity is passed up by many individuals because it comes dressed in overalls disguised as work. And you know, the spiritual path, it is work. We have to bring a lot of energy to it. We have to bring all of our concentration. We have to bring enormous commitment. But as we do that, we know that God will come back to us even a trillion times as long as one of us has that desire, that true desire in our heart to know God.